Do you ever get something floating in your water? I have a glass of water in front of me, and there's something floating in it. And I don't know what it is. I'm not sure. It's kind of it's not a hair or an eyelash or anything. It's from another planet, I think. I don't know.
On the air, everywhere. This is Metro South Podcasting.
Welcome to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us and how it affects us here on the South Shore of Massachusetts. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Hey, what's up? Hey, what's up? How you doing, homegirl? Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. How you doing? Good to be with you. I'm out of stuff. I shot my load. That's all I got. It's not true. How you doing? Good to see you, man. You're looking good. You're looking trim. Did you lose weight? No? Yeah, it's true. It looks like he gained a little weight, actually. I hate the holidays. I got to tell you, I am so upset with the holidays. I mean it. I'm not kidding you. I was so fortunate. The night before Thanksgiving, I had some bad food poisoning of some sort. I mean, I wasn't poisoned. It was like somebody, you know, like broke into my house and wearing a blonde wig and poisoned me. And nothing like, it was like Bill Cosby came over or anything. It was more like I just ate something that didn't agree with me. Ron, do you agree with this food? The food and I are not agreeing here. The food's got one point of view, like it's rancid. And I've got another point of view, like my stomach should be feeling good. And apparently we're not agreeing here, which is we're at odds with each other. We're not seeing eye to eye. We're not seeing poison to stomach. So... We're not agreeing. Such a polite way of saying I got sick. They didn't agree with me. I was eating it. It didn't agree with me. All of a sudden, halfway through eating it, it started arguing with me. My stomach said, "What are you doing here? You're not really good. I don't agree with your visitation into my stomach." And the food's going, "Hey, what's the problem with you? You're so damn sensitive. You're so with your stomach lining and all your acid reflux and stuff. What's up with that?" They just didn't agree. They did not agree with me. So I wasn't feeling too good. So when Thanksgiving rolled around, I cooked the Thanksgiving thing, which I always enjoy, but I couldn't taste anything, couldn't smell anything, and I just didn't want to put anything near my face or my mouth or my body at all, nor my stomach, which was in disagreement with the food from the night before. So I ate virtually nothing on Thanksgiving. I had no appetite whatsoever. And as I say to everybody that I talk to about this, and of course, you know, I'm the only person in the world that the day after Thanksgiving actually lost weight. And it's absolutely true. It was one of my lowest scale readings of all time after Thanksgiving. That's absurd. It's ridiculous. That's the eating holiday. It's when you eat. They created the holiday to eat. There was no pilgrim. There were no Indians, as far as I know. I didn't see any. There were no Ninas, no Pintas, no bitchy Columbus kind of guy. They just created the holiday and say, "Hey, you know, let's have a holiday where people don't have to work and they can just eat all day." And they said, "Yeah, we'll make up a story. Let's see, we already did the Bible. Let's do a Thanksgiving. Let's make that up. Let's make Christopher Columbus look like this wonderful, wonderful hero who came from another planet. His ship was going to fall off the earth because the earth is flat." By the way, I still believe the earth is flat. Oh, wait a minute. I believe that half the girls on earth are flat. That's what it is. I get them confused all the time. Making friends wherever I go. So anyway, so, you know, I lost weight Thanksgiving, and I thought it was going to be a wonderful holiday. It's pretty cool, man. You know, like, I can't get stomach flu every day, but at the same time, I'm not gaining weight, and it's the holidays. Yay. And, then I had a party at my house, a party in my pants last Saturday, and there was just food all over the place. It's not like people are throwing food. It was all kinds of food. Some of the food really sucked, man. I went to Costco. Have you ever been to Costco? It's like Skid City is what they should call it. Not Costco, Skid City. It's the only place in the world. I don't know if you have a membership there, but you have to pay for a membership. And here's the privilege of paying for the membership. No shopping carts. I guess I have shopping carts. No bags. You have to stand in line to get out of the store because as soon as you buy it, you have to stand on another line where a guy checks you out to make sure that you're not stealing anything. These are the benefits of membership. Is you walk into a store and they basically pat you down when you leave to make sure you didn't screw them. I mean, come on, man. It's the opposite of what a membership should be. And there's no merchandising. There are things on skids in a warehouse. I mean, things on skids in a warehouse. No end aisle stuff. No, what do they call that stuff? And there's no employees to help you. You can't go up to anybody and say, "Excuse me, can you tell me where the toilet paper is?" There's nobody there. They never ever. They don't believe in having people help you. It's a very, very strange organization. It's worse than the Masons. There you go, making friends again with your Mason friends. The Masons are fine. They really are. They actually fixed my steps in front of my house once. Anyway, so what the hell am I talking about? So anyway, so I go to Costco, and they have these, you know, everything is large. And when you're having a party, you know, you want to get large amounts of food. And they had a gigantic bag of like 104, 110 meatballs. I don't know why such an odd number. You figure, you know, let's make it 100 meatballs and call it a day. Nice clean on the bag, but it's like 102 meatballs. I have no idea why. So I buy this bag of 102 meatballs. And who doesn't? Who doesn't? It just captures you. And I boil these things up and I cook them up and I serve them to my guests. And they are rancid. They're not rancid or anything, but they just... They're not tasty. They're just not tasty. And I don't know. Anyway, I got Costco stuff and it was just, you know, stupid. No, I'm going to have to do that again. Never get with that. Anyway, so, but there was food all over the place. And I ate food. I had like finger sandwiches. There were sandwiches that looked like fingers. Pretty cool. The croissant. So I just ate, and now, like, I've gained all the pounds that I would have gained had I eaten Thanksgiving dinner. And next week is Christmas, as I understand it. I don't know. I don't have a calendar or nor a watch, but I believe it's Christmas next week. Now I'm looking forward to getting fat. So it's just horrible. I don't even know why I'm talking to you. I don't even know why I'm telling you this stuff. Why should you know this stuff? What business is it of yours? What am I, an open Facebook? No, I'm not. Why should you even care? It's not like people are walking up to me, "Ron, are you gaining weight?" They don't say that. They don't talk to me. "Ron, did the food agree with you the day before Thanksgiving?" You don't know. Who cares? Who cares? It's not your body. Why do you care? All right, fine. Stop it. Now I'm yelling at people that I don't even know. Oh, man. It's crazy. Today's program, by the way, and this will be borne out later to you, we're going to talk about gold because it's, times when people buy gold and stuff, necklaces and rings and things like that. So we're going to talk about gold today with the gold experts. You know, it would be very cool if people that sponsor my show, I would know who they are. But for the life of me, I can't remember who they are. This is awful. This is pretty bad, man. This is bad when you don't know who your sponsor is. Anyway, we'll be talking to whoever the sponsor is a little bit later. Crap. That's not good. Anyway. Oh, man. All right, look, I got to find out who the sponsor is because this is very uncool to have a sponsor. Oh, it's called Love Gold. It's lovegold.com. Those are the people that are sponsoring this show. Oh, man, that's embarrassing. So much for them sponsoring a show. Lovegold.com, we're going to talk to them a little bit later on in the program. Oh, man. That was not cool. That was not cool at all. You didn't hear that part that I didn't know who was... You didn't hear that, okay?
Just a perfect day.
Yeah, right.
Drink sangria in the park. And then later, when it gets dark, we go home. Just a perfect day. Feed animals in the zoo. Then later, a movie too, and then home.
Ain't always easy these days to know what to give your kids for snacks. Sugary this, high fructosey that. Heck, even the stuff they call natural ain't always natural. But there's one snack when your kids ask for it, you know exactly what you're giving them.
I want Piggy Parts. I want Piggy Parts.
Professor Parker's preserved Piggy Parts are 100% all-natural salt-preserved pig parts. What parts, you ask? Well, some folks would call them scraps or ears or hoofs, but kids just call them delicious. And with their stiff, leathery texture, one Professor Parker's preserved Piggy Part will last a kid all afternoon. That's what we call value. So stock up now for school. You'll find them at the end of the pet food aisle in original barbecue or vinegar, garlic, teriyaki, onion, habanero, pineapple flavor. Give them a try and you'll see why kids say,
That's some good piggies.
Professor Parker's preserved Piggy Parts.
Oh, they are tasty, I gotta tell you. Have you had those things? They're very, very nice. They're crispy. Very, very crispy. Nice stuff. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, there's been another entry in the Bill Cosby, you rape me, you fucking bitch, story. I'm sorry for cursing. I really am. There was no reason for that whatsoever. It had no relevance to what I was talking about, and I do apologize to the infants that were listening to the show, to the two-year-olds who are impressionable, probably being homeschooled at this time. And I do really apologize to you. I really didn't mean that at all. There was no call for that. I received no calls for that. So I do apologize for that. Kathy Lee Gifford. I'm serious. She claims she was talking on her little Today Show extra there on NBC. Kathy Lee Gifford explained her personal history with Cosby, serving as the opening act for the comedian for several years and traveling on the road with him. She said that he was capable of great kindness and recalled how she would give her and her two backup singers, backup dancers, money to gamble. Isn't that nice? That is so sweet, you know. There are sweet people who save you from death, and there are people who... Bill Cosby, he's just so sweet, such a nice, sweet man. He gave them money for gambling. What a sweet guy. Kathy Lee Gifford said she is now looking back at her experience in a different light. No crap. Specifically after reading supermodel Beverly Johnson's recent Vanity Fair story alleging that the comedian drugged her. Yeah. Johnson claimed that Cosby drugged her with a cappuccino. And Kathy Lee Gifford remembers that the comedian frequently made cappuccinos, for her and her two backup dancers. You want a cappuccino, little girl? Kathy Lee said, I do know that I got a chill reading Beverly Johnson's story, because every night when we'd come off stage, Bill would be going on stage. He would have made cappuccinos for all three of us, she said. And I always thought it was such a kind thing to do, and it was so sweet. And now you see Beverly Johnson saying that he made her a cappuccino, and I just don't want it to be true. And I am not saying that the women are liars. She stressed, I'm just saying I never personally saw it with my own two eyes. Apparently she has two eyes now. On Monday, Camille Cosby, Bill Cosby's wife, broke her silence on the allegations against her husband of 50 years, calling him a victim. He's a victim, you see. He's a victim. There appears to be no vetting of my husband's accusers before stories are published or aired, she said. An accusation is published and immediately goes viral. None of us will ever want to be in the position of attacking a victim, but the question should be asked, who is the victim? I think it's you, Camille. I think your husband is the president of the Dick Club, allegedly, an alleged dick, and he goes around like making cappuccinos and drugging people, and then when they're knocked out, he has sex with them, and sometimes they wake up and he's not finished yet. I know, disgusting, but it's possible. I don't know. If you want to see the poster child for denial, look up Camille Cosby, because she just doesn't believe that her husband did any of this. Camille, oh my God, Camille, I mean, seriously. I do believe that a lot of women have jumped on the bandwagon who were not raped or compromised by Bill Cosby at all. I have bought women drinks all my life, and they weren't to drug them or anything. And you can start turning stories around to fit the scenario. And I think that a little more than half of those women are doing that, A, and B, they're doing it because now they're in the public light, and you know, and I know, and everybody knows that getting yourself in the public limelight for whatever reason is worth it. It can be bad publicity. I mean, to be raped is an embarrassing thing, especially back in the 70s and 80s when it wasn't talked about. But even under those circumstances of extreme embarrassment and odd feelings, it's still a publicity stunt for, I believe, the majority of these women. Do I believe that Bill Cosby raped these some of the girls? Yeah, kind of do. But all of them? Kind of don't. And who do I feel sorry for? Camille Cosby, his wife of 50 years, man. He just did it during her run. He married her when he was still doing this stuff and did this stuff like way after, allegedly. And she just somehow believes him. Doesn't kind of make sense. It doesn't make sense. I want you to understand something. There was that NFL player who apparently beat his fiance in the elevator, and she said, I didn't see the video, but I fell into the wall, I think. I mean, these are people of great denial. Traumas have occurred to them, but yet they're denial people. But at the same time, and I don't know these people personally, but a lot of these women love riding the coattails of a popular, famous person. It is their being, their purpose. I believe that to be true, because most women, when their husbands have sex with somebody else or do nasty things sexually or even talk to another woman, most wives will turn around and say, screw you, I'm out of here, you lying bastard, and they'll sue them for everything they got. But for some reason, the more popular you are, if you're a politician or a real popular comedian, for some reason those wives kind of stick around because they don't want to lose that notoriety. They don't want to lose those coattails. Hillary Clinton to Bill Clinton, I mean, she's running for president. I mean, she could be a good president. I really don't know. But as far as her stature as a person, she put up with the bullshit. And you may say, well, that's really good. I say that's not really good. That's she ran away and hid behind Clinton's coattails. And she knows her husband did that stuff. And they resolved it. And he has a sexual problem or had a sexual problem with controlling his sexual urges. But she hung on, man, because she was the first lady. Not a great quality, you know. I'd be more impressed with her. She said, screw you, man. I don't care if you're the president or not. I am out of here. I don't put up with that at all. I mean, that was blatant stuff going on there. Same with Camille Cosby. She should have been out of there. I'm sure she knows what was going on and she feels bad for her husband, but she's publicly putting up with it. And in my estimation, and this, I forget the guy's name in the NFL, and beating his fiance in the elevator, and then she actually marries him and thinks it's no big deal. Yeah, you want his money, honey. You want him to stay in the NFL so you can get the notoriety and have that lifestyle. I mean, I understand. I get it. But it's not right. It's wrong stuff. And that, whenever I talk about Bill Cosby, I always feel like getting into a polka. Because that's what he did to the girls. Speaking of polkas, did you hear about, there's a new film coming out called The Interview. Sony Pictures is distributing the film. And the problem is that the film, it's a comedy. It's a ha-ha, stupid comedy. You know, it probably, I haven't seen the film. You haven't seen the film. It hasn't been released yet, but it's a stupid, it's one of the stupid comedies. Seth Rogen and all that kind of stuff. It was somewhat funny, but also very college humor, immature kind of stuff, which I don't enjoy. But apparently, and Seth Rogen was involved in the writing of this and is in the film. Apparently, it's about a couple of guys who are asked to kill the dictator of North Korea. And North Korea apparently does not appreciate the humor in having their leader assassinated in the film, or the attempted assassination, whatever. I haven't seen the film. I don't know. Now there are threats of violence against movie theaters themselves. Like, if you show this film, we will blow up your theater, or we will hack you, or we will we'll destroy Sony Pictures. The New York premiere of The Interview, is the name of the film, has been canceled. Leaks of thousands more private emails. Lawsuits by former employees that could cost tens of millions in damages. The fallout from the Sony Pictures Entertainment hack that began 4 weeks ago exploded Tuesday after the shadowy group calling themselves Guardians of Peace escalated their attack beyond corporate espionage and threatened moviegoers with violence reminiscent of the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001. That's what they call it. That's how bad it would be. I know. It's just, what kind of world are we living in now? The Department of Homeland Security said there was no credible intelligence to indicate that an active plot against movie theaters was possible, but noted it was still analyzing messages from the group itself. They call themselves GOP, which is ironic. Guardians of Peace, GOP. Anyway, the warning did prompt law enforcement in New York and Los Angeles to address measures to ramp up security. Those security fears spurred Sony to allow theater chains to cancel showings of the Seth Rogen and James Franco comedy, The Interview, that has been a focus of the hackers' mission to bring down Sony. A spokesperson for Landmark Sunshine Cinemas said the New York premiere of The Interview, scheduled for Thursday night, has been canceled. Carmike Cinemas, which operates 240 theaters across the country, never heard of them, was the first to cancel its planned showings of the film, according to The Hollywood Reporter. It remains to be seen if other chains will follow suit. This GOP group that threatens the theaters and Sony also released a trove of data files, including 32,000 emails to and from Sony Entertainment CEO Michael Linton in what it called the beginning of a Christmas gift. So they're hacking into Sony's stuff and making it public. I don't know how bad that is. And two former Sony film production workers filed lawsuits alleging the Culver City, California company waited too long to notify nearly 50,000 employees that such data, such as Social Security numbers, salaries, and medical records, had been stolen. Okay, that's bad. The filing follows another lawsuit this week from two other former Sony employees accusing the studio of being negligent by not bolstering its defenses against hackers before the attack. It claims emails and other leaked information show that Sony's information technology department and its top lawyer believed its security system was vulnerable to attack, but that the company did not act on those warnings. Sony potentially faces tens of millions of dollars in damages from a class action lawsuit, said Jonathan Handel, an entertainment law professor at the University of Southern California. Whatever. In the interview, Rogan and Franco star as television journalists involved in a CIA plot to assassinate North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Speculation about a North Korean link to the Sony hacking has centered on that country's angry denunciation of the film. Over the summer, North Korea warned that the film's release would be an act of war that we will never tolerate. It said the U.S. will face merciless retaliation. Can you imagine a nuclear war based on a Seth Rogen and James Franco film? Was it worth it, ladies and gentlemen? The film's New York premiere is scheduled for Thursday at Manhattan's Landmark Sunshine and is expected to hit theaters nationwide on Christmas Day. It premiered in Los Angeles last week, but the New York premiere has been indeed canceled as far as a public deal is concerned. On Tuesday, Rogan and Franco pulled out of all media appearances, canceling a BuzzFeed Q&A and Rogan's planned guest spot on Thursday on Late Night with Seth Meyers was also canceled. A representative for Rogan said he had no comment. A spokesman for Franco didn't respond to questions either. The FBI said it was aware of this group's threats and continues to work collaboratively with their partners to investigate this matter. The New York Police Department, after coordinating with FBI and Sony, plans to beef up security at the Manhattan premiere, which I thought was canceled. Having read through the threat material myself, I'm not talking for me, I'm talking about this guy named Miller, who is with the NYPD. He's a top counterterrorism official. He says, having read through the threat material myself, it's actually not crystal clear whether it's a cyber response that is being threatened or whether it's a physical attack on moviegoers. That's why we're continuing to evaluate the language of it and also the source of it. I think our primary posture is going to be to have a police presence and a response, a capability that will reassure people who have heard about this, that they have concerns, that they are safe. I have a comment to make, but I'm not going to make it. Following a commission meeting earlier Tuesday, Los Angeles Police Chief Charlie Beck said his department takes the hackers' threats very seriously and will be taking extra precautions during the holidays at theaters. The National Association of Theater Owners had no comment on the developing situation. Neither Sony nor representatives from individual theater chains, including Carmike, responded to requests for comment. Since the hack surfaced late last month, everything from financial figures to emails between top Sony executives have been dumped online. The nearly 32,000 emails to and from Sony Pictures Entertainment leaked Tuesday. They include information about casting decisions and total costs for upcoming films, release schedules for Sony films through 2018, and corporate financial records such as royalties from iTunes, Spotify, and Pandora Music Services. They include information about new electronic devices such as DVD players and cell phones. They also include budget figures for Motion Picture Association of America, of which Sony is a member, and at least one email about senior Sony executive who left the company. The emails also include messages about public appearances, tennis matches, home repairs, dinner invitations, and business introductions. In their warning Tuesday, the hacker suggested Sony employees make contact via several disposable email addresses ending in yopmail.com, Y-O-P-M-A-I-L.com. Frenchman Frederick Leroy, who stated that the Yopmail site in 2014 was surprised to learn that Sony hackers were using that email address. I don't understand what that meant. So that's the story. Now there are hacking threats. So when people don't like something that's going on, they will expose your company and take all the records of your employees and expose them, social security numbers, steal their identities, the whole bit, and or attack movie theaters physically. And this is the something people of peace. I really don't know. Should we be making films about assassinating the leader of North Korea? You can do whatever you want, I suppose. But if it pisses people off, I guess you take your chances. I don't know. I mean, I have no idea. Do I care? No. Am I interested in seeing the film to begin with? No. The question is more of like, should you be punished for making a film about something that someone doesn't like? I mean, North Korea isn't exactly like, well, they like Dennis Rodman. That's a strange thing. How can you like Dennis Rodman and then be offended by a film about assassinating your leader? I mean, let's see what the problem is. I'm not sure. I'm a little confused about that.
You're listening to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. I wish I could listen to it too. But sometimes he says bad words.
Hey, do you tip your mail carrier? I was going to say mailman, but there are women that do it too. Although I think now we're fairly generic with that thing again. For a while, it was an insult to use the term man in any title or activity, and you can't do that. You have to call them people. They're not salesmen. They're salespeople. Although there's really no... Would you say that that's a saleswoman? No, you'd say that's a salesperson. You see, but if it's a guy, you'd say salesman like right away. But we never say saleswomen, saleslady. It's not really... It doesn't fit. Anyway, do you tip your mail carrier? The people who carry your mail to you? I don't know. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. You understand, don't you, that apparently the post office is a federal organization or whatever, or I don't know what the hell the post office is, to be honest with you. I don't know if it's a federal thing or, yeah, it is. Well, you can't tamper with the mail, and that's a federal thing, I guess. I don't know if it's technically subsidized by or paid for, but is it a federal? I'm not sure. Anyway, you're not supposed to tip them. You shouldn't feel any obligation to tip your mail carrier on a day-to-day basis, but it may be appropriate to reward the carrier's year-long work during the holiday season. The United States U.S. Postal Service, which is federal, yeah, prohibits its carriers from accepting cash or check gifts and gift cards. However, you can apparently give them a token of your esteem, but you can't give them money because that's like, hey, I'll give you $10 to make sure I get my mail, you know what I'm saying? You can't do that. You can't give money to a federal employee like that. You can't. But you can give them things like a slice of fruitcake or something like that. But that's an insult, isn't it? If someone came over to my house and gave me a fruitcake, I'd say, what's your problem with me? I don't consider that to be a positive thing. You can give them a travel mug. Isn't that wonderful? You want to give them a travel mug? Isn't that fun? Nothing says I don't give a crap about you any more than giving someone a travel mug. It just, I don't know. It's just so... travel muggy, you know what I'm saying? It's just, Maybe a nice pair of gloves. I think gloves are a very personal thing because you wear them, and I think it's like giving them underpants for Christmas. Like your mail carrier, hey, thanks for your service. You wear jockeys or boxers? I mean, what? You know, what? What? You could give your, they suggest here in this article that you could give them a holiday card. Again, you open up the holiday card, what do you usually do? You look inside to see if there's any cash in there. And when there isn't cash, it's more of a F you than a holiday card. You know, it's kind of like, oh, what a nice card. Oh, those bastards. I don't know. William McCoy, he's with eHow. Here's what he suggests. He says, write a letter to the mail carrier supervisor at the post office commending how wonderful the mail carrier is. That is the gift. That's kind of nice, but at the same time, I don't know. Travel mug. The hell is a travel mug? How awful. Don't ever get me a travel mug, ever. A travel mug. Oh my God. I think I just run to my room and cry. All right, let's go to our sponsor, lovegold.com. It is the time of year when people buy jewelry for other people. And let's talk to them right now. Let me raise them on the magic phone of love. And we're speaking to Sally Morrison of lovegold.com. She's a gold expert. Nice job.
I know. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun.
Good. Are you calling from New York?
I'm in New York City today. Yes, I am.
Excellent. And where are you usually?
I'm based in New York.
Wonderful. Based in New York. Wonderful. So, all right, well, let's talk about gold first of all, but I want to first ask, is gold still a good investment? Is it still something worth holding on to?
I think that gold is a long-term store of value, and I think beyond the sort of intrinsic price, which is something way beyond me to discuss in detail, but mm-hmm. I think the important thing is that gold jewelry, fine jewelry, is a kind of an enduring emotional gift. And I think at lovegold.com, we really believe that this time of the year, people are looking for gifts. Gifts should last a lifetime. So we really believe in having fewer things, having precious things, and having things that are going to live on forever and not be disposable. So we selected this year on our website a kind of curated group of beautiful gold jewelry from up-and-coming young designers, from some more established designers, and I sort of offered them as a kind of ultimate gold jewelry box for the holidays for people to look at, browse, and maybe, if they want to buy.
That's, you know, I'm not in the gold business. I know very little of it, but I think gold to me is like investing in the stock market, not so much in the sense of what it's worth, but I don't know much about the stock market, so I have a guy that does it for me, and he tells me about it. And it's the same with gold. I don't know the intricacies of it. I don't know what's good, what's bad. And I trust jewelers and gold experts such as yourself to tell me what's going on.
Well, I also think that, look, since the very first Christmas, right, the three wise men came, and one of the things they brought was gold. And it's something that's an enduring metal, a storied metal. It's a kind of the metal of stories and mm-hmm. fantasies and history. And I think it's going to go on well beyond all of us. So what we like to do is help consumers find beautiful things that will inspire them and that they will want to keep and wear forever.
You know, when I buy...
So for me, sorry to interrupt you. No, it's not about what you put in your safe. It's about what you wear and what you enjoy every day. And at this time of the year, what you gift to somebody that they will enjoy every day.
Well, that's the other thing, because gold is a little bit expensive. And when I give someone gold or gold jewelry, I want there to be a gigantic sign on the piece saying, this is real gold and it's expensive.
Yes, of course. Well, I mean, it is important to buy high carat gold, you know, 18 carat, 14 carat. But again, any reputable jeweler is going to help you figure that out. And the other thing I would say to men at this time of the year particularly is, you know, have a little bit of a budget and do a little bit of research before you go into the store. I mean, for sure, go to our website, lovegold.com, and look at all the images, look at different types of jewelry, think about what she would like, so that it's not such a last-minute sort of thoughtless purchase. You know, I think you're a better consumer if you do research in everything.
When and I guess it's usually guys buying gold for girls, although I know it's the other way around as well. But is it exciting for somebody to go on the website with you to lovegold.com and say, oh, let's pick something out together? Is that as exciting as being surprised by a piece, or is that kind of passe?
I think it can be. I mean, I think it depends very much on the woman and how specific she is about her taste. You know, if you know a lot about her, like she's, for example, very classic, then she might like, you know, a beautiful pair of simple studs. And we have some really great ones actually on our site right now from a young designer in LA called Zoe Chico. But again, if she's like more fashion forward, a little bit hip, you know, maybe she would like sort of a very, very colorful, big kind of hoop earring. And again, we have a number of them on our website, but from a great designer called Me and Roe, for example. But so it just depends. I think if you know what she likes, go ahead and select it for her. But maybe it's fun for her to look on the site and give her a little bit of time to play with it and say, come back with a short list.
How do you find out what the size of a person's finger is if you don't tell them that you're getting them a ring, for example?
I guess you have to steal something from their jewelry box temporarily and measure it at a jeweler. It's funny you should ask, because I just did this for a friend this weekend. Yeah. You have to be a little sneaky.
Okay. It's kind of easy to get a necklace. You don't have to go measuring it.
It's very easy to get a necklace. And I also think with a necklace, you can get something quite personalized, right? Because you can find, there are so many like cute little pendant necklaces out there right now with little personal symbols on, or numbers, lucky numbers, things like that.
Yeah. And, you know, when you give the jewelry to a loved one, you kind of want to see it every once in a while. So it's, you know, seeing it around the neck, very sexy, very nice. Hey, lovegold.com is the place to go. You know, and you can get educated there. Is that the point?
There's lots of information, lots of interesting design information, where to buy, things like that, and, you know, lots of information about the people creating the jewelry and you know, just like beautiful, beautiful imagery and lots of ideas to get you excited before the holidays.
Let me ask you one more question, Sally. Does gold have to be cleaned or maintained?
The great thing about gold is you really don't have to do anything with it at all. It just sort of endures and it lasts and it looks beautiful for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years.
Wonderful. That's Sally Morrison, gold expert. She's with lovegold.com. Go to the site, tell you everything you want to know. It's the season and plenty of time to get hooked up there. I guess, is there a cutoff date when it's like not easy to get it before Christmas anymore?
I think that I would say don't leave it to the last minute. Yeah. Go on the website today, have a look, have a think, and certainly things you're ordering online via us would need to be ordered, you know, probably up till the 22nd of December.
That's fine, but then you can also surprise somebody on New Year's Eve with something, too.
Yes, you can.
Yeah. Sally, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Sally. What is it about accents that make people so exotically different? Sally is very, very good at what she does. She is a gold expert, nice. But when you take that British accent, no matter what you think of England, it just, I can see why Sally got the job. It just puts you in a different category. Accents work. I think you get the jobs, especially the marketing jobs and the public speaking jobs. The accents work. I'll tell you a funny story, ladies and gentlemen, before we part company. I and a friend, decades and decades ago, went to a place called El Torito's. It was a chain of Mexican restaurants. And it was after work. I was gainfully employed at that time. And we went to El Torito and we said, you know, And we were talking about just this, how accents really are very effective and make for success, and you get attention, and it just means everything. So we decided we would go to El Torito's and sit at the bar where there were many lovely ladies. Now, I was not in the market for a lovely lady at that point. We're just doing this thing. And I did an English accent. I don't do it as well as I used to do it, but I did the English accent, and so did my friend. And we decided that we would have a conversation between ourselves with a British accent. We would order our drinks from the bartender with a British accent, and we would talk so profoundly that girls would girls turn around and show interest in us because of the accent. And then we said to ourselves, well, you know, that's kind of like, what if we do pick up girls and we really don't want to do that? Because it just wasn't in the mood. What do you say? And he said, well, we're doing a stage play and we're practicing our accents. And this is one of the exercises, spend a whole day speaking with a British accent, even though we're not British. We thought, well, that's wonderful. It's a beautiful, beautiful excuse for doing something like this. And we sat there and we started doing the British accent. We ordered the drinks in British, and lo and behold, the people around us that were in earshot of our British accent started coming around us and had conversation and considered us to be very, very charming. And it was all because of the accent. So I don't know what I mean by all this. I know what I'm saying. I'm just saying it made a really big difference in our social thing going there, doing that. Ladies and gentlemen, have yourselves a wonderful day. Above all, I wish you peace.